today in the studio, Sally Stevens. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate that you can make it. And see if I can get my microphone to work. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, about what the New Orleans Cooperative Development Movement is, and about some of the things that you're working on recently?
Yeah, thank you, Janet. I appreciate you asking me to come in and talk about this. Cooperatives, you have a number of different kinds. A lot of people tend to think, the local food co-op when they hear the word cooperative. But cooperatives, a lot of cooperatives are worker cooperatives, and essentially they're worker-owned businesses. In the last 18 months or so, you've had the concept of shared entrepreneurship in terms of cooperatives, because that's what it is. It's every worker having an equal stake, equal ownership, and equal decision-making within that business. And we've had cooperatives in the U.S. for a really long time, and especially in the South. They've been largely within, in rural areas, however, agricultural cooperatives. For instance, Louisiana has a lot of agricultural cooperatives. And that's partly because the USDA has had in place for a number of decades the Rural Cooperative Development Grant, which has had allowed a lot of small farmers to form what are called producer cooperatives. And like, for instance, Ocean Spray and Land O'Lake and Cabot Creamery are producer cooperatives. And they market, sell, and distribute the products and services of their small family farm members. Urban cooperative development is a different thing. It tends to be more worker-centered, and that is especially the case here in New Orleans, and because a lot of our workers here don't make very much money, especially in tourism and hospitality, and as well as a number of other sectors. So it becomes very problematic for in urban areas, especially with widening social and economic inequality. For instance, New Orleans is number two for economic inequality, and it's number one in the rise of its economic inequality. And we have the tourism industry doesn't pay very good wages. For instance, if you just look at the restaurant industry, you have 57,000 restaurant workers in New Orleans, and they occupy six of the lowest 10 paid occupations in the city. So in terms of alleviating poverty, worker-owned businesses are one way for the poor to lift themselves out of poverty. Because we all know that the skills gap is a myth. We have a lot of very talented people in New Orleans and very entrepreneurial people. We see that in people who work in tourism and hospitality. They're very entrepreneurial. They take charge. We see it in arts, music, and culture in New Orleans as well. I mean, if you're going to be in the gig economy here, as it's called, or work as a freelancer, which a lot of people do, a cooperative arrangement is cooperative ownership and shared entrepreneurship can...
Oh, I was just going to interrupt you for a minute. I'm glad you mentioned that because, I met a young man out at Dillard University last weekend at the Drug Policy Alliance Conference, and he's a DJ, and he's studying the music industry at Dillard because he would like to figure out a way for himself to make a living doing what he loves to do. For somebody like that, how would you describe to him the difference between owning and trying to operate your own business and getting involved with a cooperative, maybe in terms of the cultural economy?
Well, one of the things about it is for low-income people, becoming an entrepreneur is very, very difficult. Accessing capital, for instance, that's one of the main reasons for shared entrepreneurship, especially if you're somebody who has lived in the South or lived in New Orleans for a long time. We know very well the way the capital is dispersed in the South and in Louisiana and in New Orleans. For instance, right now, the city has an entrepreneurial startup rate that is 56% higher than the national average. But those are people basically that have arrived since Katrina. They are not forming worker-owned businesses. They are forming their own businesses or it's companies coming in, that sort of thing. But with shared entrepreneurship, it provides you, it can provide you with capital, but it's capital that goes about in a different way. It's, for instance, a lot of businesses and music, arts, and culture are doing crowdfunding campaigns. That can be particularly difficult if you're an independent artist and that sort of thing, and trying to get enough money through a crowdfunding campaign, because that can be a fairly complicated thing if you don't know what you're doing in that area. As an artist or a musician, you need a lot of support services that can be difficult to obtain. So that's one of the advantages. For instance, I've started Rhythm Conspiracy Productions, which is a multi-stakeholder cooperative, in that we are a producer cooperative and artist and worker owned. So we're a worker cooperative and a producer cooperative, and we have members that provide those services, those support services like marketing and PR, putting together a crowdfunding campaign and that sort of thing. We can do that. And that then expands the jobs with ownership base around our music and culture in this city. When you arrange a cultural business or a creative industries business in the cooperative way, it just expands community ownership. It expands ownership for individuals and families. It becomes a democratic workplace. It's democratic solidarity economy. It's shared entrepreneurship. And shared entrepreneurship is rooted in community. It's not the kind of business that is going to take its profits and go offshore and that sort of thing. So, and then there are new social impact investors who are, for instance, if you're interested in this subject, Transform Finance is one. And within the Transform Finance is a group called Working World that does 0% financing for worker-owned businesses with technical assistance. So if you're interested in this sort of thing, I would say Google Working World and see that. So between the combination of something like Working World and the new crowdfunding, it seems to be opening up a lot for worker-owned businesses to gain capital, which is really good for the average worker, especially like we have the Fight for 15 group coming up on having a nationwide fast food strike on April 15th. And a lot of those workers, I mean, they work hard. They work long hours. A lot of people refer to that type of a job as just flipping burgers, but there really is a lot more to it. And franchises like McDonald's, big companies like McDonald's, really are never going to pay those workers the amount of money for them and their families to be able to live on. However, worker-owned, you can build that together with people in your community. So it's just a much more democratic form of business and economy and economic and workforce development.
Well, many of those fast food workers are supporting families as well. So there's this attitude that the fast food jobs are only for students or people that are just trying to get a little extra money to go through college, which may have been the case 100 years ago. Or I shouldn't say that. 50 years ago. But a lot of things have changed since then, and we live in a different environment where most of the money is going to the 0.1% of the world, and then you have everybody else. So you're listening to Sally Stevens. She's in the studio today with us for a conversation about worker-owned businesses, cooperatives, what they are, how they can benefit under-resourced and underserved populations in order to get equity in the economy. Sally, you've been chipping away at this in New Orleans for years now. What do you find? What is happening currently that you think is making a difference in terms of tipping the scales toward getting political support for this idea? And are there any meaningful things that are happening out there that are showing that politicians are demonstrably supporting these kinds of initiatives in terms of resources that they may be putting into cooperative development? Or are there, I know some cities have intentionally created offices within city government to nurture cooperatives into being so that when the city's ready to accept them, they're there. Do you find in New Orleans that kind of support politically, what are the biggest obstacles for people in New Orleans that might want to begin their own cooperative?
It is rather political here in New Orleans. We've seen some incredible stuff going on in cities like Madison, Wisconsin, New York City, Philadelphia, Richmond, California, where the leadership in those cities has really embraced this model. Here in New Orleans, we've had the Democracy Collaborative come down here and consult with the city, and we have an anchor collaborative set up now. You can read more about that on the city's new website, the Network for Economic Opportunity. But in terms of unfortunately, the understanding about worker-owned among our economic and workforce development professionals and leaders in the city isn't what it needs to be. And so we have around the new LSU VA hospital district, this was mainly behind the formation of the Anchor Collaborative that's been formed.
The Anchor Institution model.
It is the Anchor Institution model, which the Democracy Collaborative, the Cleveland, it was known a few years ago as the Cleveland Experiment, but that's what the Democracy Collaborative helped get going in Cleveland, where they started several worker-owned businesses in the inner city and surrounding their major institutions like Case Western Reserve and the Cleveland Clinic. Excuse me. And so that is being replicated, but a lot of the other cities, what I'm finding is that, and where it's been most successful is that you also have a parallel grassroots movement, because it can't be entirely top down. It needs to be met in the middle, a top down and a grassroots bottom up, because really, you know, the workers need to control this. They need, you know, that's one of the benefits of worker owned businesses, is that they control their own initiative. They control their own means of production. So what I'm seeing here is a real hesitancy for that kind of grassroots organizing, and almost in some respects, even a certain amount of repression of worker organizing and the allowance for that grassroots initiative to make changes here on the ground. And I mean, we're tired in New Orleans. You know, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of Katrina, you know, and people have been working really hard for a really long time. And we've always had that social entrepreneurship going on, but it's always been a very volunteer thing. And, you know, our economic inequity in the city right now is so high that we need to start working for ourselves now, you know. And there is that economic development money out there and workforce development money out there for trainings and to help the grassroots do that. For instance, at Job One, an unemployed or underemployed worker, you can get about $7,000 worth of services there. And employers, the problem with that system right now is it seems to be more entirely employer driven, but there are some nascent changes within that, in that there are now on the job training and apprenticeships going on. So I think that there may be an opportunity for workers to come into a center like Job One and say, I want to start a worker cooperative with all these other people that I've been working with and we've just been laid off. And then that $7,000 can pay them as they get up, as they start getting up, doing their crowdfunding campaign, researching other sources of capital funding and that sort of thing. So, you know, but it really is a matter of the people seizing power and our leaders being willing to open up some pathways to some more self-determined pathways, as opposed to pushing people into jobs and careers that they may not necessarily want to go in, but that's the only available pathway at the time.
It's great having you in to talk about this, Sally. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but before we go, I would like to ask you how people can reach out to you, how they can contact you if they want to learn more, but also think that in this time of climate change, when we're facing potential rising waters and may have to look at climate migration, I think that it's going to be very, very important that everyone have the means to transportation, healthcare, and that the, you know, the resources in order to help themselves if and when the tide ever changes. But even if it doesn't, it makes a lot of sense in terms of resilience and creating solid local economic infrastructure that will last come hell or high water. So how can people get in touch with you?
Well, on Facebook, we have the New Orleans Cooperative Development Project, so you can look for that on Facebook. Rhythm Conspiracy is also on Facebook, and we also have a website. It's not the greatest thing in the world right now, but we're getting there with it, and that's at rhythmconspiracy.com, and we are looking for people to join us on both of those projects in terms of membership and steering committees to get more and more worker-owned businesses going in the city. As far as Rhythm Conspiracy goes and the creative cultural industries, we are looking at, we're hoping to have as many as 20 worker-owned businesses and tourism and hospitality by 2018, the year of the New Orleans tricentennial, and really put the focus that year on social and economic equality for our 300th anniversary.
Thank you so much. I'll be there.